Audi.
Hello and welcome to the Big Travel Podcast. I'm Lisa Francesca Nand. Freya Riding's beautiful, heartfelt music gives you a wonderful sense of her warm and open personality. You're going to love Freya's stories here on the podcast, learning to play on her nana's piano, growing up in a musical, talented family. Her dad is the voice of Daddy Pig. Lost Without You, her song being played on Love Island, getting engaged in Lake Como, battling back from Australia before lockdown, and how also the beauty of travel allows for, and I quote, time outside your environment to think new thoughts and have new ideas. Ahead of her new album, Blood Orange, it's Freya Riding. Yeah, are they platinum discs? Platinum, I can't even say it, let alone do one.
I've got some others on this wall, but you can't see them. I should really put them on this wall because they're a little more impressive, but they're all on the other wall, which you can't see.
How many do you have? I don't even know what they mean in terms of numbers.
Well, it's crazy because I've got 4 physical ones, but I found out recently that I've actually got 50. And I was like,
wow.
Fuck.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
I was like, imagine having that many in a room. And then there's part of me that's like, maybe I should actually just get them all printed. It would just be fun just to look yourself.
Yeah, I mean, that's what you need, isn't it? Like sort of markers of your achievements sometimes. I think even the most successful of people, you know, need to be reminded about how far they've come.
Yeah, especially like when I was little and I was sort of putting my parents like vinyls on my wall to try and manifest it when I was like little. Like the fact that that's real is just bizarre. It's crazy. It's crazy.
I thought of that because that's a really good place to start, actually, because I was looking at you, you know, at your travels to see where you've been and that sort of thing, you know, doing a bit of intense research, aka Googling. And there's a lot of London growing up, and you went to the Brit School as well, which I've heard very, very good things about. But at what point did you realise that you wanted to be a musician?
So I wanted to, like, when I was younger, I started piano lessons because my mum plays piano and Celtic harp. And I think watching her play it, and her mum played it, so my grandma played it, and we had a really, really old piano that's like, it was over 100 years old, and the keys were like crumbling off, like as you play it. And basically, I started wanting to write songs kind of when I was about 8 or 9, and I kind of discovered my voice. And basically, yeah, my nana was very, very kind. We couldn't afford a new piano, and she got us one that was really, really nice. And that's this piano that I wrote all my songs on, like Lost Without You, all of it. Because I think, you know, she didn't get the opportunity to kind of, she didn't live in a world where she got to be that level of musician. So I was like, I'm like honored to kind of do it on her behalf, you know?
It's reminded me a little bit of Brian May's guitar, you know, that I think he still uses today, doesn't he? That his dad made for him. I don't know if you know that story. But
I know that. That's amazing.
Yeah,
wow.
No, his dad made it for him and he still uses that guitar today.
That's so beautiful. I love Brian May. I love like how intelligent he is as well, like being like Cambridge level. Is it like astrophysics?
Yeah, I think he's a professor in astrophysics. Yeah,
that's crazy.
And he's also
a rock star on the side.
Yeah, amazing. A rock star on the side. But he also campaigns, I don't know why we're talking about Brian May, but he also campaigns to like save the badgers. And I remember going for a talk to a talk for one time that he was doing, and it was like, we must save the badgers, we need to speak to the badgers. And I'm like, no, this is good, we need to speak to the badgers. It stuck out. Talking of you growing up, like I have to admit that I've met a lot of famous people in my work in music, mm-hmm. and in travel. But one of the times I was most starstruck is when my kids were very young and I was watching Peppa Pig over and over again. Not by choice, I have to say, although it is very clever. And a new friend's husband turned out to be the director. Now, your dad is Daddy Pig. Yeah. I mean, seriously, I don't think I could look him in the eye. I'd be too in awe of it.
Well, it's just his voice. He doesn't look like that. Although the character is, I would say, incredible. Out of all the characters he's played over the years, I'd say Danny Pig is the closest to his actual personality.
That's like, Danny Pig is just a genius.
Yeah. It's amazing because we know the family who created it and they're so talented and so lovely. They were like a local family and we just kind of like, you know, they were like, oh, would you want to be in this sort of cool indie, you know, kids cartoon show? And my dad's like, yeah, that sounds great. And it was so weird because like, you know, you never know like the influence that was sort of taken from it or whatever, but it's really cool because it's like, it's me and my little brother and my mum and my dad. So sometimes I see some parallels, but then I'm like, it's also completely different, you know?
Right, I see. So did you ever have the opportunity to be Peppa?
I know, never. I was too old. I was like, I was 12 when it began.
And also you've got this beautiful, you know, sort of lovely, soft, deeper voice that Peppa just
doesn't... it's not like a kid's cartoon voice.
Yeah.
It's like,
Exactly. Was there many opportunities for travel growing up?
So no, basically, we didn't go anywhere. And that's why I love this podcast, because basically I love learning about other people's travels and I love a recommendation. So very open to that. But it's basically growing up, I think watching my dad would only travel for work. There'd be a call and he'd be like on a plane to New Zealand like the next day, or a plane to like Vancouver, like in a heartbeat. Trying to get him out of the house to do like any kind of holiday, impossible. And if we booked in a holiday, it would be like in the UK, maybe Wales, because like my best friend moved to South Wales when I was little, and that's just where we go and stay with them. It was kind of around the Gower. It's a really beautiful area, and like Three Cliffs Bay and like these secret beautiful beaches. But my dad would almost certainly get a job if we booked in a holiday. It was almost like a guaranteed, because it's such an unpredictable lifestyle. Like, there's kind of pros and cons to that. But I'm not sure we had a family holiday outside of the UK ever. I'm not gonna exaggerate, ever.
That's
So
really
this summer,
interesting.
first time, yeah, I know it's wild, right? Some people will be like, yeah, we're going like here and there and there. But my dad did take me to LA when I was 14, because he was doing a convention for a not a sci-fi show, but like a fantasy show that he was in called Outlander. And the lovely ladies who were running the convention, really lovely American ladies, heard that I sang. They heard some of my music and they were like, would she like to come out with you? And so they flew us out there, and I just remember my mind like exploding. I literally was like jumping up and down when I found out. I was like, oh my God, because I wanted to go someplace and do something so badly. And I got to play to this convention, on this grand piano. It was in a bar in a hotel. I think it was the Westin in LA. And I've been to LA so many times since then, but I think that was the first chance I got to see that there was a world, outside of North London, and it was incredible, and I loved it. And yeah, I get to play with these lovely ladies, and they were so supportive. And I think it really helped me kind of manifest going back there a lot for work, because it felt like a, once you've seen something, you can do it again.
Yes,
And it wasn't like this
absolutely.
barrier, you know? So
Yeah,
that was the
once
first
you've
time
seen
we had
something,
to
you can do
travel.
it again. That's a really good point. I often say this about people in jobs and at home, if that growing up, if you want to get in TV, for example, and you don't know that people actually do work in it, you don't just watch it on a screen, you ac it can actually do it. Or same as if you want to be a lawyer or a doctor, or you need to see that path,
Yeah.
don't you? And I can kind of see how that relates to travel. There's a lot of people that go on far more trips, either because they're privileged or their parents have
Yeah.
connections or whatever early
Yeah.
on, and that sort of inspires them. But yeah, it is interesting to think that your dad was obviously doing so much travel. He was sick to
So
death of
much.
it. It's like, I want to stay in. And you're like,
Yeah,
oh,
he doesn't want to
great.
go anywhere when he comes home, but my mum would always try and like find holidays for us and like one time we were driving, I think, to like IKEA to like get a sofa or something, and it's kind of on the road to Brighton, and she just
Yeah.
didn't turn into IKEA, and we just kept driving to Brighton, and we had this amazing day out, and it was so lovely. And it's like, it's so funny because I get to travel so much for work now that it's kind of like I've replicated my dad, what my dad did a bit, which is like I travel so much for work that I have a mental block to booking holidays. I really do. I genuinely struggle. And this summer we actually booked our first holiday, and it felt like awkward to do it. I was like, am I allowed to do this? I don't know. When you're self-employed, you're like, am I allowed to take
Yeah,
this
I know,
travel?
yeah.
But it was really important for us. And we went to Lake Como, which was so beautiful and like really, really hot. But the thing that blew my mind was not just like the incredible scenery and the food, because I would travel anywhere for food. Food is like my main goal for traveling. So the pasta was amazing. But it was also the time that you have like outside of your environment to like think new thoughts and like have new ideas. Like, and we came back from that trip being like, I think we should like try and plan a wedding in the next 2 months. And I don't think if we'd have not had that time just to like walk by the lake and like chat and like, just really connect again
Yeah.
and be a different version of ourselves. That's the thing I love the most about travel, I think, is that you get to be a different
Yes.
version of yourself.
God, I wish I could express it like that. I'm going to write that down and express it because that's exactly how I see it. So this is your now husband. So you did actually, you
Yeah.
did do it. That's
Yeah, and I don't think
amazing.
if we hadn't taken that holiday, I don't think we would. But I found it hard. I was like, wait, so we, and to be fair, I was still doing like mix notes for the album, like, on like a sun lounge, just being like, so I didn't really stop working, but we kind of
No.
signed off the album when we were out there, and like feeling that weight lifted and feeling that like so happy and so relieved that it was finished, and I was so proud of it. And I was like, oh, now I can really enjoy this trip,
You talk a lot about heartbreak in your music, and actually, I've been sitting here sort of listening to it. I was familiar with it anyway, but you sort of sit there and you think, right, I'm going to get really familiar with it now. And I've been sitting here choking back the tears. It's like really emotive. Sitting there, I'm like watching you sing, and I'm thinking, how on earth are you not crying, when you're trying to perform? I guess you get so exposed to it, you're so used to it, but it's so moving. And just your
Thank you,
relationship
Lisa.
made me think of it.
That's incredible. Thank you so much for saying that. I think it's such a strange job because it's completely authentically like true every time you do it. And it does, it takes a huge amount of emotional energy. Like after I've been on stage or like on tour and stuff, and we're in a different city every night, like I'll get into my bunk and I'm just like out. I will sleep so much on tour because it's like I can't actually perform without giving it everything. And I'm not, sometimes it's to my detriment. Like when we're, you know, rehearsing for a tour, the band will be like, pace yourself, Rhea. Don't do what you do. It's like half sing. I'm like, I can't. So I'll kind of, I'll give it everything and then I'll have to just mime for the rest of the rehearsal because it's just too much. Because I want to give it everything. And then that's the same on stage. Like, especially if there's an audience there, I'm like, I know what it's like to not have that audience. And I just feel so honored that I'm going to give them like the best I have. And the best I have is that like emotional connection and that vulnerability. Yes. And it's scary every time you do it. But
you really feel it. You really, it really comes across, you know, to it really, really comes across. And, it, you know, the lyrics and the delivery, it's just, and it made me think of it there where you're talking about, you know, that really romantic, being in Lake Como, pretend, you know, planning to get, deciding to get married. It's such a beautiful romantic place anyway. But, you know, to be able to do that, it's just so, so lovely. Is this the man, because you got back together with someone, didn't you, as far as I know? Yeah. Is he the one that broke your heart the first time? Well, not he broke your heart, not, but your heart was broken.
There was a lot of growing. Yeah, exactly. There was a lot of growing to be done, I think, on both of our sides. And we've known each other for, this will be the 10 years of us knowing each other. And we were best friends for the first 3 years. I met him at an open mic night in North London when I was 19 and he was 22. So we kind of grew up together, you know? Mm. And I think there's a lot of sort of years where, especially when it's such an intense job, like, you know, we both do the same thing for a living. So it's like, you just have to do so much inner work to not let that stress come out on the other person and try and do the growth and not hurt them in the process. But I think the time apart, and a lot of it was to do with traveling, ironically, like being on tour, I was like, I can't do this to you. Like there are other people in the world who have normal lives. And also the idea that like I'm doing what I love, but it's full on. And for 3 years, I basically wasn't at home. And so it's hard to have a relationship when you're just not there.
It's hard to keep anything going back home, isn't it? You know, friendships, relationships.
And that's the problem, is like the thing I love most about music is writing about the people I love and things that I've struggled to say to them in, with words, I try and say in music. And suddenly something happened where the music kind of came above those people. And I was like, that's not right. It's not right. Mm. And that's like, ironically, the lockdown gave me the chance to kind of rebalance that.
You were apparently in Australia, weren't you, when on tour, at the pandemic, beginning of the pandemic. Yeah.
It was crazy because we never, ever, ever tour in January or February or March, ever. But for some reason, we had a whole European tour booked in January. We did the whole of Europe. We did like Paris, like all of Germany, like Copenhagen, all of it. And then we got on a plane to Australia a couple of weeks after. And yeah, we did shows in Sydney and Melbourne. And those were the final shows of the tour. And I've flown to America so many times, but I've never actually gone the other way. I'd never flown via Asia, so we kind of stopped off in Singapore, changed the flight, and that was an amazing trip. That was such a warm welcome. I've never been to a country where I was like that warmly welcomed without ever having stepped foot there before. I was like, this is crazy. That was, they actually gave me that disc on the first day that I landed, and I was like, what is going on? They're such beautiful people, and the food is amazing, and obviously the weather. But you don't really, some places it's when you get some days off is when you get to fall in love with the city. Apart from that, you don't really see it, which is sad. But when you do get to see it, I had a bit of a walk down to the Sydney Opera House on my own, and I was like, oh, this is so nice. But I think I was struggling with that heartbreak, and I was struggling with, like, I was hiding from it via, like, adrenaline and traveling. And I think, like, anything that's, like, beautiful and addictive, you can take it to a place of harm, or you can take it to a place where it's healthy. And I think maybe my level of traveling for work and work only was kind of getting a bit out of hand. So, yeah, we got on a plane. It was around the world trip, so tickets, so we had to go via America on the way home, and the borders were like about to shut, and this was the Sunday, and we managed to get back on the Sunday, and they shut on the Monday, so we were like scraped by. But then I just felt so grateful for the whole of the pandemic that we did that much traveling in 2-3 months, because I was like, I'm not going to travel for the next 2 years, but I know it. And I didn't get on a plane for 2 years, and it had been like a plane every day to no planes, so that was quite a wake-up call for me.
Did you have a, because even now when you're talking about that, when you're talking about that late February, early March 2020, I start I'm getting goosebumps, you know, because I think everyone takes themselves back to what they were doing at that point. And the order's shutting, like bang, bang, bang. I can sort of almost visualize it around the world. And And I was stuck here. My family were, you know, friends were in other countries, and everyone rushing to get back or being stuck somewhere. That, you know, the sort of makes me shiver. And maybe that's because I found lockdowns incredibly, incredibly hard to have my wings clipped like that. But how was it for you? So you had all this intense period of traveling. So there must have been like quite a nice sort of recuperative period. But did you feel caged in, or were you quite accepting of it all?
I guess I felt kind of guilty because I was like, I was so ready to stop. I was so ready to have a break. I was like borderline ill by the end of it, because I was just, I was not stopping at all. And so it kind of forced me to stop. And I remember being like, this is a sign from the universe, you need to stop. I mean, it's a really scary time. And like, that's the thing. It's like, you have to take that with a massive pinch of salt, because it was such a scary time. We didn't know how bad this would be. You know, and like, you know, I lost my nana in the pandemic and we didn't get to go to her funeral. It's like, it's crazy. I guess, yeah, I have friends who are like real like travel bugs, and they just, every time they get like 2 weeks off, they're going to like Singapore, or they're going to like, you know, so far. And I just like madly respect that, because that's something that I really want to like overcome, is the feeling that I am allowed to like travel to places for just fun. Cause I'm kind of like, if it's not for work, I'm not allowed. But little by little, I'm getting there. And it's like, it's so beautiful. Like, we went to New York for a week for like a mini moon after our honeymoon, cause we didn't have time for a whole honeymoon. I'm so excited to plan a honeymoon, maybe like a big one next year or the year after.
Sorry, I'm still distracted about, you know, about the travel and how wonderful it is. And, but I, when you said you lost your nana, and it's like, I, you know, was so close to my nan, and she died 8 years ago, but the thought of not being able to be at her funeral, you know, I know it's only a small part and you'd justify it by being a small part of their life and she would understand and everything, but it was just, it's just hard, wasn't it? Really hard.
Yeah. I felt so lucky that she got to see that final show, because everyone was like, oh, she's too kind of old to come to the show, because I played in Manchester where she was staying near my cousins, and they were like, she's too sort of weak to come to the show. And I was like, this will be the last show, I have a feeling. You never know, but I was right. My mum was right, and basically like my bass player Aaron, who's a very big tall man, like fireman lifted her like up the stairs, because she couldn't get up the stairs. And this is the woman who's like, you know, she paid for my piano, like she paid for me to go to a better school than the one I was getting violently bullied at, so I could like give all my love to this instrument and this life. And then she got to see me on stage in front of like, you know, 3,000 people, and it's like with like confetti cannons going off, and I'm like, I'm just so grateful that we had that.
But what did she say?
She was just like, she's not one of like the chuddly grandmas, like she's quite like clipped, but she was, I think she was very impressed. And she got to meet Ewan, who's my husband. And that was like, she wouldn't have met him. But she always thought that, even when we were friends, she was like, ooh, like, I think something's going on. Like, she really, really liked his family. And I was like, Nan, we're just friends. She's like, yeah, sure.
Nans are so precious.
It was a difficult time, but we, you know, we celebrated her life and we talked about her. We did our own kind of little wake for her at home. And we had to, you know, watch her funeral on Zoom, which is mental. Yeah, I always try and find like the positives in it. And I think, I'm just really glad she didn't have to like sit on her own throughout that whole pandemic. Yeah, I'm actually really glad
as well. Yeah, absolutely.
You know, that would have been kind of even, I don't know if that could have been worse.
Even worse. Yeah, you just don't know. Yeah. There's so many ways of weighing it up. Yeah, but I totally get that. Also in the pandemic, I read that you started your next album, and because of the pandemic, we're recording part of it in a shed, and the next part after the pandemic in some of the best recording studios in LA.
Yeah. It was kind of crazy, because you think you'd get so much help with your second album, because it's like more important than your first, you know, because it's like you're bigger. It was the complete opposite. Like, everyone just stopped. Like, there was no help, no feedback. And I was like, mother of God, like, this is terrifying. So I turned to the fans. Like, I literally was like, I've just been on tour for so long, I can't go to like nothing. I miss you guys so much. I have all these new songs and I don't know which ones to choose or which ones to work on. And it's overwhelming. And basically I said, like, I'm going to be on Instagram. I'm going to do an hour long live every Tuesday night for like 14 weeks. And the fans like tuned in and they were just there for me. Like, they were just there. And I'd play old songs like Lost Without You and Castles. And then I put in new songs kind of, and they'd help me choose them and be like, this is the one we like. This is the, and they so clearly championed like 3 or 4, well now like 5 songs that are on the album, like so hard from the very beginning. So for me, I just feel incredibly grateful, because I think people would assume that you get a lot of help.
Yeah.
It was me, the fans, my family, and then when we got back together, Ewan. So it's kind of wild that this album, at the time I was like, this is really scary. And now I'm like, I'm actually really, really grateful, because I don't think I would have made an album that I just I think I would have let the external pressure get to me, but there was none. So I was like, I'm just going to make an album I love. Fuck it.
No, like, it's no external pressure, but also no external support. I mean, apart from the fans, and they're the people that really count. And I guess what this world of social media and connection has given us in a way that it's sort of, in some ways, obviously you have to be talented and also be lucky and many other things, but in some ways it's cut out the middleman, hasn't it?
Yeah.
In that sense that you can speak directly to your fans. You can, they can help you choose what they want, the songs they like, you know. And,
exactly. It was such a strange place to be, but I'm so grateful they did that for me. And also, like, no one told me to do that. In fact, if anything, they were like, probably don't do that. And I was like, I'm going to do that. Yeah.
I think like, you're so...
unfinished songs. I'm like, why not?
Yeah, no, exactly. Like, no, why not? And you're in charge and it works.
With your fans is everything. So yeah,
and you're incredibly open, and I think most people, you know, a lot of people are these days. Again, some media, particularly people of your generation. I'm a little bit older, but you know, sometimes it's really hard when you've got a profile on social media, which I have not as big as you, but I have as well. It's really hard, like, to be any. I find it really hard to be anything else but myself. I'd find it like really difficult to pretend to be something I'm not. And someone said to me in business, they're a business person, very successful, the other day, it said, like, don't give away those personal details. I was like, I can't help it, you know. I just can't help it.
I love that. I think that authenticity and vulnerability is like, that's the thing that like draws people to you. And it's like my mum's favorite saying is always like, connection, not perfection. And every time I'm panicking, like, you know, before a show and I'm like, I'm not going to sing it right, she's like, you don't have to, you just have to, like, you know, tap into something deeper and you have to mean it. And I was like, yeah. And it's like, whatever you're doing, it's kind of like, you can try and give people what you think they want, or you can just be yourself and just, you know, say, fuck it, and just see what happens.
Oh my God, I love that. Connection, not perfection. I think I might like get that tattooed in Sanskrit.
Literally,
Hindu,
it's my favorite thing. It just, anxiety just evaporates, because it just reminds us that like, if our goal in life is to all be like these insane robot Barbies that just are like, hello, I'm Barbie, we would have no, like, the imperfections and, like, you know, the grit and, like, the funniness and, like, the quirky, like, those are the things that people are like, oh my God, it's so crazy. Like, as I got to play my new single Weekends on Graham Norton, which is one of my biggest.
Yeah, I watched it. It was amazing. Really good.
You watched it. Honestly, yeah. Childhood goal. Like, I vision boarded that, manifested that so hard, and the fact that it happened, and I kind of just let it go out into the ether, not thinking that anything would happen, but it happened. I was like, oh my God. But I was signing vinyls the other day, like I signed like 4,000 vinyls, and my arm was dead. But basically the courier man, he's kind of, I think, in his like mid to sort of late 40s, maybe even 50, he came up the stairs to help me because the boxes are really heavy, and he's like, I don't want to be like out of turn, but he's like, I've actually, you, when you were on Graham Norton, like, your story is like the exact same as mine. Like, I was with someone, then we like broke up, got back together, and then we've just broken up again. And I've, you know, turned to learning piano to kind of get that emotion out of me, and to hear that you went through the same thing, it means so much. And I was like, jaw dropped, because he is not, I wouldn't say like a typical fan.
Yeah.
I was like, that's incredible that I was so embarrassed to say so many things. You know, I was embarrassed to say that I was like heartbroken, and now I'm embarrassed to say that I'm happy, because it feels scary to say either. Yeah. But at the same time, if it's true, it's true, and you can't hide from that. And it does, it connect, that vulnerability connected to me with people, but I didn't even realize, you know.
You probably forget sometimes that there's a world out there, and not just the people who follow you on social media and things that, who are, you know, you probably got something in common with, but with the delivery guy who's actually, you know, you're not something in common with, you know, you're still touching them with your music.
He's so sweet. He's like, if you ever need any help, like, you know, lifting stuff, like driving stuff, like, on the run, I'm like, it's just so sweet. I was like, that was always my goal, was to connect with people. And to feel like, you know, I wasn't alone in feeling this pain, you know, or this heartbreak. And it's just, I'm wanting to empower and rebuild yourself when no one's there by your side. And then suddenly they're there and they're thousands. And it's like, it's a beautiful thing.
Connection, not perfection. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Talking of perfection, actually. So one of your, I don't know, we're calling it a big break, not necessarily, but it certainly got your music to you know, a larger audience, was when your song Lost Without You was played on Love Island. What was that like?
I know. It was incredible, because when I wrote Lost Without You, Love Island didn't even exist as a TV show. So it just shows you that you never know, like, the serendipitous way that things are going to happen. And out of 1,000 things I've done, I would not say that that was even remotely on my radar. But I'm still so grateful to that moment, because it did. It changed everything for me. And I think you do have to be grateful to any kind of catapult that gets you, you know, out of the wilderness and into a stratospheric feeling. because it just, it opened so many doors and gave me so many incredible opportunities, like playing Glastonbury, like playing on the Late Show with James Corden. I was like, this is surreal. Like, what is happening? And I still watch every episode of Love Island now, because I didn't watch that episode.
I've never watched it at all. Like, not because I've got any snobby things about it, but I just don't have, I'm a single mum of two kids. I don't have time to sit and watch telly.
It's a lot of time. Yeah. It's a lot of dedication, actually. It's kind of, I like to think of it as kind of like, it's like the female equivalent of like football, but like for relationships. Yeah. It's kind of like watching someone be like, oh, he like goes in and he's like trying to like hit on this girl. And, oh, she rejects him and all. And then it's like, oh, he goes in for the kiss. Well, he makes it. You know, you're like, wee. It's kind of like for relationships, football. I think that's why, you know, there's such a big female following to it. And I just love watching it to kind of just repay the debt of gratitude. And also, I love discovering other artists on that show, because sometimes I'll discover songs that I've never heard before on that show, and other Netflix shows as well. That's kind of how we all find music now, via like shows.
I used to be like music on YouTube and things, that not people performing, but someone like doing a video, like some YouTuber that my kids watch, Casey Nesbitt or Nesbitt.
Oh, I love Casey.
Yeah. He had a song there, and I was like, oh my God, what is that? And I had to, I can't remember who it was now, but it was just really cool. It was called I Didn't Know, but I forget what the band was, but I was like, I need to get that. And actually, Love Island, I'm just sort of veering away from the travel, which we do on here, because it is about life stories through travel. But Love Island is a place of travel, and it gives you that sort of vibe, you know. It's like,
escaping when you can't get out of the UK. It's like a bit of sun. Definitely. I still find it so funny, because it's like, I couldn't get a tan if I tried. I've never been on a beach wearing a bikini in my life. And yet suddenly this show full of amazingly bronzed people falling in love is like part of my life story. I feel
Hang on, let me pull you up on that. You've never been on a beach in a bikini?
Never in my life. Never.
That's interesting. So if you were to go on holiday, which obviously you don't, what would you like to do? You know, you don't have that much time in travel for work, but what would you like to do?
I think I would really like, you know, my husband really wants to go to Japan, and I really want to go to Japan as well. So maybe for like our honeymoon, I also have this vision, like I want to stand under a waterfall in a tropical place, because I've never been to a tropical place. No exaggeration, never. So I'd love to do that. So maybe like, I really want to go to Hawaii. And he really wants to go to Japan. So maybe that could be our honeymoon one day. We never know.
You can do that together. Absolutely. Like, you know, tie them in, or do one of those round the world trips again.
Yeah.
You've been promoting the album. Like, you seem to be traveling all over the place at the moment.
I know. I was in Dublin yesterday. It was great.
Yeah, I saw that. I was looking at your Instagram. I was like, oh my God, Dublin. You're in Dublin. You're on Graham Norton and I with me. Yay. I feel so privileged.
Honestly, Dublin, I re-fell in love with it. Like, I've always loved Ireland so much. Yeah. I think, you know, I have ancestry from there, and it's like, probably why I'm a redhead.
I was just going to say, you can tell. That's the no tan thing.
It is no tan. So we went to Dublin, and I had kind of, not like some time, but yeah, there was like a little bit of time. I like walked around Dublin's like town centre and just like had a lovely time, like got a coffee and I was just walking around. And I just felt so lucky. I was like, you know, even like trying different food, like the food in Dublin is amazing. I mean, obviously like the French would hate me for saying this, but I think it was really like better food than I've had in Paris. So
interesting. Yeah, the French would hate that.
They hate that. But I think they have special places for other French people. And I'd love to go to those places. But in general, like the food we had in Dublin was amazing. And just like, you know, the general like Irish warmth is just, great crack.
Yeah, great crack. Yeah, it is. It's so, I just love a dark pub with, you know, someone playing the Boran?
Baran.
Baran, that's it.
My mum plays like Celtic harp, and we have a Baran. Yeah.
Oh, fantastic. Oh, I love your childhood, even if you didn't, really go anywhere. You know, I love the fact that did you ever all sort of play together?
Yeah, like sometimes it would kind of like rarely happen, but my brother taught himself guitar as well. I have one younger brother called Arden, and he's like 21. He's incredible because he's taught himself guitar. And sometimes like we'd all have an accidental jam. And obviously my husband's a singer as well. So it's like sometimes when we were around the other night, we were kind of singing we were talking about bedtime songs that like my mum used to sing me and my brother. And I like remember every word, and we started singing them, and then we started singing it in like 5-part harmony. I was like, what is going on? This is so cool. And no one stopped. So we just did the whole song in 5-part harmony. And then we just stopped. And we were like, that was cool.
That's so cool. What are your, oh my God. So I'm going to come on to my last question there, which is kind of tied up, because like, my thing is music. I don't play anything. My brother's a musician, but I absolutely love music, and I love travel, and those two. In fact, I'm falling into my last question now, but I'm going to ask you about this before I ask you my last question. And then if it was this answer, you've got to come up with something else. So the bedtime music is what you're talking about. So I'm a single mom, and I've got two boys, and Even though we've got the room for anything else, they sort of sleep with me. They're very attached to me at the moment. They're now 10 and 8. And so at bedtime, we listen to bedtime music. And they're not so into music in the daytime because they're more about the devices these days. And they play out and stuff. Mm-hmm. They do have lives. But at night, it's my chance to like get them into some music. So I'm thinking of things that are like bedtimey. We do morning music as well, which has obviously got a different tempo. But I'm playing them, you know, my favorite songs and also songs I think they should know, and just sort of using the time to educate them about music. So what were your bedtime songs? What were they?
So I love the fact that you use that time to like show your boys like the songs you love, because I think, I've never thought of like playing music, because my mum would always sing it. My dad would sometimes sing it, but it was always my mum, and we'd get like an itchy back at the same time. It's like my favorite combo ever. And when I was babysitting kids, I'd give them a rubby back and give them the same songs, and they loved it. Like, it was the only way to get them to bed, was to be like, you get a song if you go to bed now. They're like, fine, I will.
Oh my god, can you come around mine every evening about 9, please? I'm in Brighton.
I know,
you like Brighton.
Rubby backs and like sing songs to them. But the songs that she would always sing are Every Time We Say Goodbye, Ella Fitzgerald. And one time when I was in Scotland on tour, my sustain pedal broke and the piano kind of just stopped. And I was on tour supporting Ray LaMontagne. The piano stopped, 3,000 people in like Glasgow. And I just panicked. And I was like, what songs do I know, like a cappella? And I just sang Every Time We Say Goodbye, like my mum sang to me at bedtime. But a cappella to like 3,000 Scots. And I was like, wow, that happened. Okay.
Again, it was kind of beautiful. Shivers, crying. You're going to make me cry for about the fifth time on this podcast.
No! And then the other song is a song from a film called The Three Amigos, which is one of my mum's favourite films. And it's really funny, with like Steve Martin and Martin Short. Who else is it? But basically, we call it Bumbi Dee Dee. It's like Bumbi Dee Dee, Bumbi Dee Dee, Bumbi Dee. And there's like a kind of cowboy round the fire song. It's a really, really good song. It's in the film, and she'd sing that to us. And then she'd do like the little character at the end being like, good night, Ned. He's like, good night, Dusty.
Oh, that's so lovely. I'm going to have to watch that again. I'll watch it with my kids.
It's a really cool, it's a really good song, actually.
I'm totally going to throw you. Oh, yeah. Is there another one? Because I'm totally going to throw you now and ask you my last question. And you can't use the answers that I just said.
Okay,
I can't remember
the last one, yeah.
Okay, fine. So my last question, because, you know, music is my absolute passion, and for some stupid reason, never began to learn anything. Although my brother is a professional musician who lives in LA. You should meet him. You'd love him.
But what does he play?
His main instrument is guitar. But he plays everything, you know, a bit like everyone.
Does he live in LA?
He lives in LA. Yeah, lives in like,
so
plays
cool.
in, like the Troubadour and the Sunset Marquee. And just,
I love the Troubadour. I've played there twice. It's such a beautiful venue.
Yeah, it's really good. And he loves that. He has this great, you know, this great life. And
Your brother. Younger or older?
He's 2 years older. Yeah.
So cute.
Yeah,
I love that.
So I never, you know, learned any music myself, even though it's my thing. But why I want to do this podcast is I'm so inspired by Desert Island Discs that it's basically kind of ripping off that, but with travel, which I love equally. So my last question, getting to it, is always about music, because I think that music and travel also go very, very much hand in hand, you know, sort of helping cement memories and moments and everything. Yeah. So if I had to ask you to choose one song that reminds you of a memorable time and place of travel, what is that song and what is the memory? Got there in the end.
It was like 2018, I think. I just played Barn on the Farm, which was this amazing festival that has like really indie artists, but then they go on to be really big. Like Ed Sheeran played it as one of his first festivals, and then James Bay played it as one of his first festivals. And I love the vibe there. It's a really cool little festival. If you have a chance to go, it's incredible. But it's honestly a really nice festival, not too big. You could like take kids. It's really nice. But we had a surprise guest who was Nick Mulvey, and I had never heard of him. My friend was like, you have to come see him. And I was like, okay, sweet. And I got really, really obsessed with this song called Meet Me There. And basically, I was not with the person that I'm currently with. I was really, really heartbroken. But we'd seen each other at this festival, and we hadn't seen each other in like 7 months. And I was like, oh. And this song, like the lyrics, I just really imprinted on it. And then I went on a tour around the whole of America as a support tour. And I was going down like the west coast of America, like looking out at all like the sea, and kind of, it was so beautiful. And it was actually something that I visualized with my mom's friend, who was a life coach. And she was trying to help me like overcome my fear of like success and going for music. And I was thinking about giving up music. She like visualized one thing. I was like, it would be driving down the west coast of America, like in a tour bus, like a little van. A couple of years later, it happened. And basically, I was like listening to this song like on repeat to kind of like almost manifest him back to me, because the song and the story is like, there's a place like Meet Me There. Like, it's kind of almost like a story of two people who haven't seen each other in a long time coming back together. And I was kind of like listening to it just like on repeat. So that was the song that will always remind me of that journey down the West Coast of America.
Oh, that's beautiful. You're almost bringing me to tears again. Freya, thank you so much for coming on the Big Travel Podcast. I've loved it.
This has been a joy. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you so much, Freya. What a wonderful human you are. And the new album, Blood Orange, is fantastic. Remember, we love to hear from you. So thank you for listening. You can find me on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and all that jazz. So do come along and say hello.